Hi there, my name is Emiliana Corrin. For the past 2 years, I've been on a journey, getting involved in youth leadership and community work. I've met some pretty incredible people along the way who've challenged me, taught me, and shaped how I see the world. I'm still figuring things out, like everyone else, but I've been so lucky to cross paths with these change builders. I have sat down with each of them, asked them questions about their own journeys, and have given you the opportunity to listen in. Hopefully, by the time the episode ends, you'll have learned some lessons that it took me several years to understand. It'll serve as a blueprint whether you're a youth, an adult, a mentor, and whether you're experienced or just getting started in your own journey.
In today's episode, I'm going to be interviewing Madeline Kwom. I've had the extreme pleasure of serving with Madeline, who is a Texas senior, serving with her on the National Youth Leadership Council's Youth Advisory Council from thousands of miles away. Madeline has such a positive attitude towards leadership and has worked so extensively with these organizations to ensure that her voice is heard that I think she has something to add to the conversation of youth-led spaces and to community engagement. Madeline is one of the most entertaining leaders I know. I never find myself having a conversation with her that I don't want to last forever. Hopefully, you feel the same and get the same lessons that I do from her. So let's go ahead and listen in.
From what I know from you, you're pretty heavily involved with Girl Up, Half the Story, and from your bio that you shared with me, you've also been involved with United Nations work. Being involved with all of these, especially with YAC, how do you define youth empowerment and leadership in a way that actually feels achievable?
I like that you included the second part, because I think when we start to think about youth empowerment and leadership, we start to get really nervous because it seems like this very vague concept that, you know, shows up on the posters of our teachers and our mentors and our, you know, advisors' walls. But to me, youth leadership empowerment is very simple. Step one, number one, leadership means that you and I are going to stand in front of people and we are going to project our values and beliefs and we're going to share them with the world. That's the first part. We're going to be confident in who we are and our values and how we feel like you should be able to take power and to be able to stand on the world stage. But the second part is being a servant. I think that one of the things a lot of times people are talking about right now is the act of being a servant leader. So youth empowerment is about, you know, speaking your beliefs. It's about, you know, I believe in female empowerment. I believe in digital well-being. But also, I'm going to listen to your thoughts about female empowerment. I'm going to listen to your perspectives on digital well-being. And then when you put those two things together at the same time, you are leading as an individual, but you are empowering others and giving them a voice.
In your own youth leadership, youth empowerment, you've mentioned a few key areas, specifically female empowerment, digital well-being. I know you've worked extensively with these groups and you've dedicated a lot of your focus to these areas. When did you really realize that creative communication and that your skills towards those areas needed to be applied towards inspiring positive social change, and why focus on that?
Absolutely. I'll actually bring you back to about a week ago when I was having a conversation with a friend. We were walking out of a club meeting and we walk across a bunch of students making a poster. And I look at my friend, I'm like, hey, like, wouldn't it be so cool if I was good at art? And I'm talking about how I was in art for some time in high school. I'm talking about, you know, how I wish I was better at art and like what I think of my art skills. And she stops me and she says, you have an art, you're good at it. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm like good at art, but like, you know, posters, whatever, whatever. And she goes, no, your art is leadership. Your art is communicating with people. Your art is being creative about how you address people and the way that you do it using digital mediums, or you do it doing marketing, or you do it doing your writing. That is your art. And that made me stop and think for a second, because oftentimes we think of art just as we think of leadership as a very stagnant definition, right? We're thinking about leadership as the person on the podium, you know, giving a very motivational speech, or we're thinking about art as the, you know, the street artist who's doing graffiti on the wall, or someone who sits in a studio all day and paints pictures. But at the end of the day, it's kind of important to understand that the way that we do our leadership, the way that we do our art, takes form in a medium. And I'm proud to say that mine is creative communication.
I I wanted to focus a bit more on two of the organizations which you shared with me that you work with, Half the Story and Girl Up. Half the Story, you actually shared it with me directly through the Youth Summit, the Youth Leadership Summit. You were able to invite Daniela, I think.
Yeah. Daniela and Lars.
Yeah, you were able to kind of harness some adult power there because of how extensively mm-hmm. you've worked with the organization. Can you kind of walk us through why building digital wellness is so vital and effective for youth today and why you chose to partner with this organization?
Absolutely. So my own story, very briefly, revolves around the idea of being a child who was largely sheltered by her parents. Her parents, you know, never let her use her phone ad hoc. Social media was not something I grew up with. It was something I had to really fight for to be able to get access to. And in the end, I ended up earning the trust, earning the privilege, earning the freedom to have autonomy over my devices, my accounts, et cetera. And I've never had much of a problem up until when I was going through a rough patch my freshman year, fall semester. And that was a time when I was struggling. I had recently been injured from a sport. I had been sidelined from that sport. And I had all this free time. So I instantly turned to my phone as a way to kind of numb these very complicated emotions that I had been trying to avoid, that maybe school or talking to people or sleep or self-care I could not find a way to fill the void of. And I began to kind of enter a spiral that I would honestly be in for the next, you know, 4 to 6 months. And witnessing myself, you know, going home from school and the first thing I do was reaching for my phone, just ending up in this loop of TikTok, I suddenly realized, wait, children that my parents didn't want me to be, I have become on my own. I have created in myself the one thing that I told my parents, looked them in the eye and said, I do not want to be like that. And seeing that in myself made me realize, so I am lucky enough to have two incredibly supportive families. I have a loving household, and I eventually had the discipline to get myself out of this rut. But what if I am a child in a different part of the world or in a different, maybe even the same region, and who does not have one of these things, maybe does not have supportive parents who look over their shoulder every 5 minutes, or maybe I'm in a household that isn't as loving or supporting and I need to find a constant escape out of my current situation. Or what if I am someone who may not have the discipline, may not have the experience of getting themselves out of a hole, right? Like everyone has some kind of experience, you know. I think the self-efficacy, being confident in yourself to get yourself out of certain situations and being able to have that conscious thinking, wait, I can't stay in this situation for long. What if I didn't have that?
Unfortunately, it feels like everything has to be with the phone nowadays. And honestly, after we had our retreat and Sayed gave that amazing presentation about our phones, every single time that I'm like, oh, I'm so overwhelmed right now. Oh, I can't think. I turn my phone to grayscale and that fixes like half of it.
Yeah.
To your point about girls specifically needing to be targeted about it, my father, he works in mass communications. So obviously me getting social media and getting a phone was a pretty big deal in our house. And he shared with me like 3 articles. They were each like 20 pages. And I hadn't really like paid much attention to them, but he was like, honestly, if you want a phone, you have to read through these. And it was articles about how social media specifically targets girls' weaknesses and the correlations between decreasing mental health and happiness in like young adolescent teenagers, specifically girls. And I can't not like ever get a screen time reminder without thinking of those articles now. Honestly, a lot of what you said kind of resonated with that side with me.
I love that he did that, actually. And that's a perfect example of parents who are aware of the dangers in the world and they're going to educate their children. They're going to take an active role in their children's involvement on their phones. And, you know, you have supportive parents who want the best for you. I hope that you're in a really awesome, you know, home environment, but you can understand that children who did not grow up reading these articles and have parents said that these are the warning and the conditions before you get a phone, like what are they going to think about when they see a screen time reminder? They're probably just going to ignore it and going to treat it like some kind of like, you know, suggestion about what they should do instead of actually considering the long-term implications and risks they may be at. So it really goes to highlight, you know, parenting does take an active role in that, but again, like nonprofits, like half the story, they're trying to take a role to targeting children directly, because some people may not have the parents that you and I have, who may not have the access to the articles that you and I have read. And it's really powerful to understand that, you know, there are people out there who are trying to target this disparities, because it is really important, the role of the parent, the role of awareness in many of these situations.
Girl Up's philosophy really focus on expanding girls' skills, rights, and opportunities to lead. Why is expanding these opportunities for girls so crucial to changing the face of leadership for generations to come?
I think I'm going to say something maybe a little bit different than the narrative that I think that currently exists. A lot of the times we hear about lots of philanthropists or international organizations specifically arguing that women are disadvantaged in terms of leadership because they simply don't have access to it. Now, I come from a relatively affluent background and community in Texas. I live in the suburbs, right? I'm a suburbanite. And here, I would be hard pressed to say that they are, yes, they are, but to the degree to which the argument has been made, women here are not inherently disadvantaged, right? I go to the same school as the boys in my community go to. We all attend the same classes and we know the same people and the same opportunities, the internet resources available to our community. It's kind of universally available to all of us. However, I'd like to say that the leadership, where leadership truly experiences a divide, is in the unspoken, slightly microaggressions and the existing sentiment of girls being too afraid to speak their voice and make themselves known to the world because of the societal stigma around it, that I would argue. I don't think stigma is the right word. But what I mean to say is, when you're a girl in a classroom and, you know, there's an opportunity to public speak, I always use public speaking as an example because I feel like it really resonates with a lot of people who are seeking to understand, you know, the extent to nervousness that many of us feel. Because I actually read once, people would rather die than they would public speak. Now, to me, sometimes it feels like these two things are literally the same in terms of how they feel occasionally. But it's important to understand that when you're a girl, many girls, when they're given the opportunity to public speak, it's the same opportunity given to a boy. Many of the girls feel like if they were to put themselves in that situation, they would be more vulnerable. They'd be more at risk for criticism. They'd be judged more harshly and they would be less successful.
One thing that I do remember was like those first few yak sessions. It felt like it was just you and I having a conversation because they would ask, they're like, does anybody want to contribute? And I'd see your camera pop up and then I'm like, gosh,
all day.
I can't leave Madeline alone, so I've had to pop on.
But I can assure you, Emiliana, just as I can be as confident for myself, that before we were able to put ourselves out there, I'm sure that there was a time when someone else asked you and I in separate occasions because we didn't know each other. Someone asked me, say, hey, Maddie, do you want to like present? And I said, no, I don't want to embarrass myself. I'm sure that now being confident, that as confident as we are, and we still have insecurities. We have a lot to learn. We're very young. But right now, if we were to ask one of our friends to like, hey, you know, why don't you lead with me? Recently, I was asked to lead our school's pep rally. That's like 400, 500 kids. And they're asking me to lead it. And I'm a senior class president. And they asked me to go speak. And I'm like, hey, like, I'm excited for this. I'm a little bit nervous. And I made a little bit of mistakes. And I was like worried about that. But then and I brushed it off. And then I asked my friend to do it, who's a girl. And I said, hey, like, do you want to do this with me? She's like, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. She saw me mess up and she's instantly thinking, if I mess up, what is the perception going to be of me? And she is an adorable, super sweet cheerleader. I love her. She's the cutest, like nicest girl ever. And she's thinking, you know, if I ever put myself in that kind of situation, like, how is that going to look on me? And I empathize with her. I literally thought, and I was like, at first I was trying to convince her, like, hey, you should do it. You should do it. But at the end of the day, I thought about it and I was like, you know, they're going to have to go through that journey on their own when they realize that this existing narrative of girls in leadership, like this has to end. Just because you make a mistake on stage or you put yourself in the public eye and it doesn't go as well as you would like, or you put yourself in a vulnerable situation and people do criticize you. Well, guess what? It's not the end of the world. You're still a leader, and a true leader is someone who pushes past that temporary emotion, pushes past that failure, You have to be a novice in something to eventually be a master.
I'm just asking you for your advice. Were I a listener who was just listening to your story and I was just so empowered, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go out right now and I'm going to try and make some change. What is the first step that you think they should take? And what is the best advice that you can give to young people who are already involved and are trying to find out ways to deal with burnout or that sense of competition that I think we all have upon opening LinkedIn?
If they've never started something before, I think the first step that I would say is examine your own story. This was advice that I was given when I was a freshman. I'm like, you know, I want to get into a good college, right? Because, you know, what freshman wasn't thinking about that. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, Mom, like, I want to get into a good college. So she's like, okay, so we signed up for a bunch of seminars, like guaranteeing that you're going to get into Harvard, you're going to get into Stanford, and get into Yale. And I'm sitting there like, okay, great. The first thing it says is choose a social justice topic and just dive really deep into that for 4 years. And they're like, you know, just pick one. And I thankfully did not do that because that would have been absolutely horrible. I would have chosen something that I had no regard for, like maybe like, chicken rights. I don't know. Like choosing a niche topic, like you're closing your, you see that meme of that guy who like is blindfolded and throws something at a dartboard? Like that is sometimes how I feel about advocacy. I feel like sometimes, especially for young people who are in the college application process, they try to choose the most niche thing possible with the hopes it will like wow the pants off of some admissions officer in the future. And the reason why I say if you genuinely want to be involved in something, you are going to examine your own story, because nothing hits home, hits emotionally or hits deeper than something that is derived from your past. I have three passions, right? I write this on you always like laugh at me for not sharing my CD. And honestly, I promise I'm not that sweaty. It is merely because I like, and that's part of the second question, which is like, how do you like feel sane and feel like you don't need to compete with other people? I'm not competing with you, but trust me, there's a whole world out there that is trying to compete, that is trying to make me feel like I need to compete. So I have three passions. It is female empowerment, female empowerment, digital well-being. And the last one is service and education, right? Education mainly. And those three things have some kind of intrinsic significance to me. They have emotional significance to me. If someone were to give me a 1 hour soapbox on any of these topics, I can guarantee for 2 out of 3, I would probably like wind up like getting really emotional, choked up, and probably end up crying because they have some kind of significance to me. I explained the female empowerment thing because I grew up understanding what it meant to feel silenced by myself. So I want to make sure that girls around me never feel like that. I want to serve as an example that can inspire girls the way other girls in the past have inspired me. With digital being, I explained my story. I witnessed something in myself and realized other people are experiencing the same thing. So therefore, I'm going to make sure that other people never feel the same way because it feels helpless. And that is probably the worst feeling in the world. And the last thing is education. I am raised by 2 incredibly hardworking American parents, and their mothers came to this country with the hopes of sending them a better life. And because of that, they encourage their children to get an education. And both my parents have master's degrees, and I intend to do the same. Because of that, education matters to me. Because of those three things, I am passionate. That is something that fuels me past burnout. That is something that is rooted from within. And that is something in some shape, way, or form for the rest of my life. Whether I'm in college, I'll be working, I'll be retired, doing something towards these causes. Those are 3 things I will spend the rest of my life fighting for.
Thanks for listening. I hope this conversation gave you something to think about, something to act on, and someone to become. You never really know your true potential until you get involved. So take that first step, no matter what it looks like. Until next time, keep building your change.